at 808 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you all along on this Thursday. And a lot to talk about this hour. And talking with us for a half hour or so about one of those subjects, Attorney General of the State of Alabama, Steve Marshall. Thanks for coming back.
Oh, good to be here.
And you're in town. Not only, I would like to say you're in town just to come by the FM Talk 106.5 studios, but while you were here, you happened to... I mean, it was all planned to come here, but
right. While
you're here, you did happen to take part in a pretty big roundup for federal firearms violations yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday was a good day for public safety in this community. There was an announcement of 29 arrests of those for gun offenses, not only in Mobile and Baldwin counties, but also as high up as Selma. I really appreciate Richard Moore and what he is doing with leadership on that area, but I think what people should take the most sort of pride in is that not only did we take 29 violent offenders off the street, that it averaged over 4 felonies apiece, 10 different arrests.
Not first-timers?
Not first-timers at all. But what we saw is a collaborative nature between ATF, the U.S. Attorney's Office, Sheriff's Departments, both in Baldwin and Mobile County, Mobile Police Department, our office as well, and so that you brought state, federal, and local partners together. And we're seeing this around the state. We've talked here before about our Violent Crime Initiative, which is really simply about... let's develop collaboration and partnerships among multiple agencies. And so, we had 15 arrests up in the Black Belt earlier this year. We had 11 arrests in Montgomery. We had additional roundup of over 170 people through Central Alabama. We've seen in Montgomery, for example, a reduction in the number of violent crimes by 15% over the last 12 months.
And that's so significant.
I think we're beginning to see tangible differences when people are coming together and being able to work, not worrying about who gets the credit, but making sure that we're doing the right thing by communities.
Well, okay, and I think that this would be a fair question to ask, and talking, if you're just joining us, with Attorney General Steve Marshall in studio, and Steve, when there are these joint efforts like this, and I want to hear it from you at the top of the food chain here in Alabama for law enforcement, because I hear it from Sheriff Sam Cochran and others, why it benefits one agency to work with another agency, because there could be a part of it you'd want to say, well, that's in my county or that's in my city and we'll take care of it. Why do you bring partners in?
First of all, it's a force multiplier. When we look at the resources and the assets that we have, that when we can bring other people together, we may get additional resources, additional expertise otherwise may not be available in local law enforcement. But broader than that, I think one of the things that I've seen, I was a prosecutor for 20 years. Still, that's sort of what sort of drives me and where I really sort of view myself. But as a district attorney, what we looked at is for our worst of the worst, where could we get the highest offense and keep the people in prison the longest? And typically that was going to be on our federal gun cases, partly because of mandatory minimums, and that's a broader issue that probably could be part of the discussion. But what we also know, when somebody goes federal time, they're going to serve roughly 85% of that sentence.
Right.
That's not necessarily true at the state side. And so if we can reserve, like we did for these 29, again, I talked about the record that these people had. Obviously not individuals that are contributing to our communities in a very positive way.
Right.
When we take them off the streets, as well as seize guns that they have usually acquired through illegal ways, we're taking the worst of the worst, but we're also removing streets or guns from the streets that otherwise could be used for violent offenses. And so I'm very much a proponent of not worrying about territory, not worrying about turf, not worrying about ego, but instead worrying about getting something done. And yesterday was an example of getting something done.
And when you do that, you said serving 85% of the sentences at a federal level. That's not the deal in the state. I mean, so how does that work? I mean, is there an average percentage for state versus federal? Just something that rule of thumb. It doesn't have to be specific.
Yeah, it really is going to depend on whether it's a violent crime or a nonviolent property offense. I will say this: that if you look at Alabama prisons now, there are over 80% of our inmates are there for violent offenses, which means that we're warehousing those that are our worst of our worst, but that also if they're a lower level offenses, they're not staying very long. And so we know that people will come up with good time credit for parole pretty quickly if it's a nonviolent offense. Even on our violent offenses, they're going to come up after 10 years, and that's not true in the federal system. And so, again, federal system is not for every criminal offense. Most of the work is done by Ashley Rich, for example, here, or Bob Wilters over in Baldwin County. They're the ones that are handling the majority of the offenses. But when we identify those that are truly the ringleaders, then federal cases really are of great value. And that's why I really, that's why I'm such a fan of Jeff Sessions, because he said gun crimes matter. Mm-hmm. And if we're looking at how we impact violent crime, then the federal authorities need to have a role in that. And so we have a great relationship with David Heitz, who runs our ATF here in the state. They have been very proactive with us in a variety of areas, not just here down on the coast, but also throughout the state. And what I think we are seeing, and I'm very excited about this, are very tangible changes in what's going on with our violent crime rate. We won't know the real data for a couple of years because it's usually a couple of years behind. But what I know anecdotally is that we're making a difference.
Well, that's good because, I mean, we do this every day. And unfortunately, it seems like every day we're reporting a crime, a gun crime here in our area. I mean, it's person shot, multiple people shot, gun battle, these kind of things. And, you know, I'll be frank, the mean part of me says, hey, if bad guys want to go to somewhere where there's nobody else and shoot it out with bad guys, that's lower on my list. But the problem is they do it where they're the good people are.
Right.
And those people are, or they're predators, and they're going after good people. And these guns, I want to talk about this in the roundup yesterday, and I don't know if the stats are in, but so many times locally, MPD, Sheriff's Department, others, Baldwin County Sheriffs will tell you the guns that are used in these crimes are stolen.
They are.
What about yesterday? Is that...
Yeah, we don't know yet because some of those are still having forensics done on them.
Okay.
But the reality is that in many of those cases, that's exactly what the case is. And it's why, you know, one of the sort of the simple tips we always tell everybody is make sure that you register your serial number for your gun.
Right.
And so that we have the ability to know that if, in fact, a gun shows up in a crime and we're running that serial number, we have some ability to know where it came from. And one of the very proactive things, and really commend Mayor Stimson for this, is there's a program called NIBIN, where we're able to trace. NIBIN is an acronym for a federal program. But what it does is gives law enforcement the ability to trace guns through its history of other crimes. And so that we know, for example, if the same gun is showing up in a certain area among multiple people, that there's a connection between them. And it also becomes very much a clue for law enforcement to be able to solve many of our unsolved violent crimes.
That is interesting. I would say that, you know, recording, some people hear you say recording the serial number. I'm not doing that. I'm not going on a registry. That's my business. But, you know, if you do it for yourself, I mean, you should be doing that for insurance purposes anyways, y'all.
No, and that's I'm not talking about putting it on a website. I'm talking about for personal information so that if a gun was stolen, you can give law enforcement that serial number. And that not only can they get it back for you, but we'll also know potentially who the bad guy is if they find it with them.
Right. That's the thing. And it benefits you if y'all make a recovery. We now know who stole that gun
Absolutely.
From us. And y'all, seriously, on the other side, just insurance-wise, I mean, if you do have firearms and stuff, just saying, well, I had these guns, doesn't always work. Even if you have a rider, you need to have serial numbers, pictures, those kind of things.
Absolutely.
All right, can you hang on for a second?
Absolutely.
All right, come right back from the news break. More with AG Steve Marshall in studio, and we'll talk about what went on here yesterday, and also this fight against census data numbers that involves the state of Alabama, but also the national perspective on that when we return. Right, and also just to double down on that from Kane in the traffic department, that wreck on the Bayway westbound 31-mile marker has traffic backed up big time. We'll get another update about 10 minutes from right now. All right, continuing our conversation with Attorney General Steve Marshall, talking, number one, what had you, I knew you came in town just to talk to us, and while you were here, you happened to take part in this huge roundup of violators, people with long and lengthy track records here of breaking the law and who happened to be busted on gun charges.
Yeah, and it was a good day. Good day. By the way, people don't know what happens on the break here. This is the reason why I show up every time.
I'm kind of a different kind of show. Yes, we
had a good one. Had a good one.
Talk a variety of issues. All right. Last time you and I were talking, you said, "Listen, we're looking at a story here, and we've been talking about it a while, that the state of Alabama risks losing a congressional district." And we know how apportionment goes. As you look at states, the bigger the population, the more members of the House of Representatives you get. Population drops. Another state gains. They get another district. You lose one. It's a zero-sum game.
Right, right. Because, you know, we have a finite number of congressional members that exist. And so within the House, the population for each state determines ultimately how those members are apportioned. And we lost a seat several years ago in Alabama, and that's obviously impacted us a little bit.
And we can lose them by, I guess it's better to explain, we can lose it by not growing and another state growing. It's not always losing population, but if some other state grows at a faster rate, and we don't, they move the puzzle piece around and we lose a congressional district and Texas gains.
Right, right. And that's why, you know, one of the things that we did was, and I think last time you and I talked, we had hired an expert to say, if, in fact, those who are in this country illegally, whether they came here illegally to begin with or they had lawful status and otherwise didn't re-up,
right,
that if we counted those individuals for purposes of that congressional apportionment number, what does that mean for Alabama? Mm-hmm. And statistically, he came back and said, you know, with over 90% degree of certainty with the data that he had, that if we count those individuals as part of that number, then Alabama will lose a seat, that we will see Ohio lose a seat, and that the state of Montana will not gain a seat, and that they will go to Texas, Arizona, and California.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we felt like that's wrong. We don't believe that that is...
Right, so what, and just in layman's terms, we're trying to figure out what the founders wanted when they call for this census to determine the population. You know, is it to determine the population of citizens or people overall? I mean, that's right. Isn't that the question?
Well, I would say there's a subset to what our lawsuit has. You know, number one, the census can count anybody. I mean, there's no doubt if we wanted to do that. But also, we ought to know their status.
Right.
And this litigation is specifically to say we need to know your lawful status so that we can be able to subtract that number from the total that's in the census for purposes of congressional apportionment.
Right.
Because
why would you apportion leadership to people that are not citizens?
Exactly.
Yes.
And the thing that we've seen with the rise of illegal immigration in the country is that the states that are truly the pockets of where those individuals are going. I mean, that's where a majority...
You just named it, yeah.
Yeah, there's basically four states, and there's a high concentration in those particular areas. You know, it's why... You know, we've talked about sanctuary cities on the show before.
Mm-hmm.
It's why, in essence, sanctuary cities become a conduit to allow for Californians of the world,
mm-hmm,
who say, embrace this idea that we're not going to enforce the law. They become the beneficiaries of their own unwillingness to do what is right, because
mm-hmm,
they can say, well, we can count these people to raise our value. And not only is it congressional representation, but also remember it's the Electoral College.
Yes.
So in essence, we would be giving Alabama's vote for president to the California. And
right.
Obviously, I'm not going to stand for
right.
that.
Right. Whichever California, the whole state, or if they split it
pockets
in three.
Of three. Yeah.
Well,
right.
Okay. I mean, because that it seems like a simplistic question, but it's been drugged through the system, and you know this whole idea that how dare people on the census, you know, declare whether they're a citizen or not. You know, this has been contentious, which I don't understand, because you boil it down to the meat of it. If we're trying to figure out how many citizens there are so we can give them their share of the voice in Washington,
right,
that seems to me to be pretty cut and dry, but it obviously isn't. You're having to do what, you know, attorneys general have had to work on this.
Yeah, and we're fighting this battle alone right now, you know, because Alabama is the one that is most adversely affected. And
well,
so
what about the folks in Ohio? Get them on board.
We hope they will be. I've contacted my brethren in both places, and I think that we'll have plenty of support. And frankly, talking to the AG in Texas, I mean, I think they're examining whether or not, in fact, you know, they believe that as a result, just as a matter of law and as a matter of principle, that we're correct. And I'm also going to be very curious to see what Department of Justice does in response, because if you think about some other litigation that we've talked about here, you know, we filed the lawsuit on DACA.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Justice Department has come back and said they think that we're right about whether it's unconstitutional. So we've seen DOJ step up. You know, we filed the lawsuit to be able to set aside Obamacare. We've had now Department of Justice file and say, in fact, yes, we believe that we've taken away that one linchpin that Justice Roberts upheld Obamacare. It's now gone. And so we believe that that's unconstitutional. So I really think it's going to be interesting to see the Department of Justice's response, at least to the very specific constitutional argument that we make. Also, the Administrative Procedures Act claim, and we won't get into the details of that. But I do think that we have the opportunity to be able to stand up for Alabama in a very remarkable way with the assistance of the Department of Justice, if, in fact, they will look closely at where we are. We do think, you know, one of the threshold issues is, do we have standing?
Yes.
Do we have the authority to go forward?
Can you bring this case?
Yes.
In Sullivanese, that means, can you bring this case?
Exactly. Right?
Yeah.
And we have Representative Mo Brooks that is one of our plaintiffs, and so we think that clarifies standing completely. But if we overcome that standing issue, then I think we're on very solid ground constitutionally.
All right. A couple things, just 3 minutes left here, but I'll run through these. Subjects don't take any time, like separating families on the border.
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
Well, take of it's broader. You know, what we've seen is that Congress has punted the immigration issue for way too long, and it's time for them to step up to the plate and do their job. You know, it's one of the reasons why we fought DACA. DACA could be a program implemented by Congress, but yet a president by executive order had to do it, and that's unlawful.
You mean, dare ask the legislative branch to legislate, to make
scary
laws, you know?
It is scary. But that's really where this rests.
Yes.
And so to the extent that this has been thrust in the president's hands, it is not of his doing. They are enforcing the law. if, in fact, we have a policy in place through Congress that is creating the situations where children are being removed, then let's address that in Congress. But they have the opportunity to act, and yet we still continue to see that there is inaction on this issue, and it's time for them to step up.
Yeah, it takes a brush fire for Congress to now they're going to get on it.
Right.
Don't you worry. Now they're going to get on
right.
it. Also, I want to talk about back here at home in Alabama. I ask you this question every time. I know I sound like a broken record on this. Is it legal outside of tribal lands in the state of Alabama to run any kind of gambling whatsoever?
No. No, I mean,
but what if I'm in a special area? Like, if the city council tells me I can, or the county commission tells me I can,
that's still not their authority to do it. And it's why we've had to fight 9 different lawsuits around the state. It's why politically we see millions of dollars right now coming to another candidate in this AG's race, because I'm willing to enforce
the
law.
He came out. I want to get to this, because I thought about you when that came. He came out and said, no, in fact, it is Steve Marshall who is the handmaiden of the gambling interest.
I'd love for somebody to see where that money's gone in my account. Because what we've done is to be able to file 9 cases in 5 counties to say it's illegal. And we're waiting. We've shut down one facility. We're waiting to shut down the other 9. We believe that we'll do it. The Supreme Court has been abundantly clear that there is no such thing as electronic bingo in the state of Alabama.
How can it be this? I'm just a simple guy. You know, I hear that. I followed this in the Supreme Court's ruling. You know, then you had former Governor Bentley saying, well, we're going to kind of leave it up to sheriffs and people in those areas. Either, and I'm not on a war path against video bingo. I don't care. I don't play this stuff. But either something is against the law for everybody, or it's legal for everybody.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And the Attorney General has to be the authority to be able to enforce it when local officials won't do it. And so,
and you're enforcing local officials, be darned. It's against the law. You're shutting it down.
And it's my responsibility to do it. You know, that's not a smart political move. You know, if you look at the polling, probably more people would rather have it than not.
Then yet, fine. Just like we said earlier, that's the job of the legislature.
Exactly. Exactly.
Just like we talked about the border issue, go ahead. You ought to enforce it to every letter of the law, because then if the Alabamians want it, then they're going to put pressure on the House and Senate. We'll get something passed.
Absolutely. And that is, again, where the venue for this change to take place. Legislature passes laws. My job is to enforce it. Right now, gambling is illegal in the state of Alabama, and I'm going to do my job.
All right. People want to learn more about the campaign or what you got going on day-to-day. Where do they go?
It's stevemarshall.gop for the campaign. We also have the AG's website out there that they can learn exactly what their attorney general is doing every day to be able to defend and protect them across not only the state of Alabama, but also in this country. And so they can find that at ago.state.al.us.
All right. Great stuff, Steve. Okay. Thanks for coming
back.
Thanks
for letting me back.
All right. We're coming right back. We'll hear from you at 343-0106, 343-0106. Also, we'll probably rattle the phone of our buddy Rob Holbert with Lanyap, talk to him. It's all straight ahead right here on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Day 37, FM Talk 106.5. And big thank you to Attorney General Steve Marshall for stopping by. Be able to catch that interview if you're just joining us now or you want to share it with somebody. Of course, that podcast will be up a little after 8 o'clock this morning. Also want to say...
Wait a minute. Let me add something, sir.
Yes, and...
Facebook Live.
That's right. You can go watch it.
Yeah.
Radio with pictures.
There you go. And make sure you stay tuned for the commercial break time. Those are things that really, people like to know what happens during commercial break time. I got you covered.
Yes, because during the Facebook Live, Kelly will not turn off the camera during commercial breaks. So you got to see, yes. What.
And because I care about you and our guests, I always let everybody know we are still rolling. So if you're trying to give away the Powerball numbers, the winning Powerball, this is not the time to whisper
Do I
them.
Change?
You're the exact same person.
Pretty much y'all are seeing what it's like even when there's not video rolling. Also, heads up, head out. I'd say tonight and tomorrow night, or really any night that ends in Y, to go see our friends at Cottage Hill Package, because they've got a couple things. Can I say this? I'm going to get in trouble,
what?
Probably. I get where the cigar bar is going to open very soon. The cigar bar is coming soon, but I think I can't say anything more than that. I'm probably already in trouble. I will say this. This is what I can let you know. That a huge selection of wine, craft beer, fine liquors, and great events going on at Cottage Hill Package. You want to see the lineup of these beer tasting events, wine tasting events, cigar events, all on their Facebook page. So go to Facebook.com, look for Cottage Hill Package, or CottageHillPackage.com. Man, his family always has great activities going on and a great selection. When it comes to gift buying, like it was, I think, a big hit for folks around Father's Day. They could go in there. They went to one of those, one of the beer tastings, mm-hmm. and while they're there, picked up cigars for Dad. Go in there.
They're so helpful.
Yes,
they
and they
really
can help
are.
You. Which, like, I'm like a cigar idiot. I don't know anything about, you know, I just know kind of some things that my dad has spoken to in the past. So they go, okay, uh-huh. well, then you like this, this, and the other.
Like, you can tell them the aroma, right. and then they can match
it
up.
I've seen the little label thing. I uh-huh. said, okay, it's this brand, and then they can walk you through it. But, yeah, they have their own tobacconist. It's like a park ranger for the humidor. There, so check them out.
Does he wear a special hat, like a smoky?
Yes, he does. A smoky hat. I get it. Okay. Quarter of Cottage Hill and Hillcrest, CottageHillPackage.com. All right, let's check in with our buddy Rob Holbert from Lanyap. Hey, Rob.
What's up? How are y'all this morning?
Doing good.
Good morning.
I want to talk about a couple things here. Both sides of the bay. Where do you want to start, in Mobile or Baldwin County, Rob?
Man, you spin the wheel. I don't care. Whatever.
I want to start in Baldwin County.
Take the causeway when you get there, though.
Yes, I want to start in Baldwin County. Cover of the new Lanyap out is... He's got a dude on there, and he seems to be protesting something or holding a piece of paper.
Yes,
he may be holding
paper.
A paper airplane. I'm not sure. What's that all about?
What it's about is that the city of Fairhope, the people in Fairhope, want to redo their government. They want to reform the government of the city of Fairhope, looking very strongly at going into a city manager form of government. And,
okay, so explain that for somebody like me. A city manager form.
Well, city manager form of government typically means that the council, the mayor, the elected people, they sit on the board, they sit on the council, but the city manager runs the city day to day. They hire a city manager, somebody who's an expert at doing these things, to run the day to day. That person is in charge of hiring, firing, doing all those things, run the budget. And, I've covered a lot of cities in my life, and I've actually, for smaller cities, I find it to be a very good form of government generally. If you get a good city manager, it runs pretty smoothly.
And so that would be, are there any other municipalities here in our area to look at that are doing it?
I can't think of one around here. Most people around here, the mayor is, a weak council, strong mayor, strong council, weak mayor type form of government. It is a lot to expect a mayor to be capable of running a city, running a $20 million budget, $30 million budget, that kind of thing. And one of the things about a city manager form of government is the attempt to try to take some of the politics out of things, and that's obviously what's going on in Fairhope. They're at a standstill because they just politically are at war.
Okay, well, yeah, can you...
And the council, there's just a war.
Well, and that's what I'm wondering, an update from last week in this war, so we don't have to go binge-watch the old episodes. What's the situation right now in Fairhope?
I mean, the situation is just that there's, I think, a complete lack of respect and trust between the mayor and the council. And so, the latest thing was the attempt to have the chief of police resign... the council said, he turned in his resignation. The council refused it and tore it up in front of everybody, just as a symbol of them rejecting that. And so, it turned into this whole thing of that they're attempting to try to take control of the police department, which I don't think they have the right to do. So it's just, there's just a whole bunch of fighting. That's really just what it amounts to, is a lot of fighting.
All right, then let's bring it to this side of the bay, and something that was talked about a whole bunch yesterday, and I know that you and I were talking about it as well. This move, we'll see if it's a move. A feasibility study that says it's feasible to basically swap airports. In other words, Mobile Regional, that volume going to Brooklyn, and then maybe what's at Brooklyn now going out to Mobile Regional.
Yeah, I can't tell you right now whether I think it's a great idea or not, because there's just no numbers attached to it. I was a little surprised to see the mayor tweet and Bradley Byrne both sort of say, hey, we need to do this immediately, because there are no numbers attached to this proposal that they put out yesterday. We don't know how much money it's going to cost. I have no clue. The question of whether we're going to capture more people from Baldwin County, in my opinion, and I think we've proved it over and over again, is just simply price. People around here are willing to drive an hour out of the way for cheaper tickets, and we see that over and over again. And, you know, I mean, if you've lived in a bigger city, when I lived in D.C., we had three airports that served D.C., and it was sort of like it is here. There was, you know, Reagan that was in town and two that were each about an hour away, and, you know, a lot of times you ended up driving an hour away because the prices were a lot cheaper.
But people would argue that the prices aren't cheaper here. It doesn't seem to be, at least in, I guess, common thought, the prices don't seem to be competitive in Mobile. Although you and I have talked about that, and I actually talked about it with a couple of people yesterday, that you need to go back and check because sometimes actually they are.
I find myself, when I fly, I find myself flying out of Mobile more often than not. And we've done stories in the past where we have tracked tickets for months and watch the prices, and in general what we found was if you buy your tickets earlier, they're pretty similar. I mean, but that's the question of that is, you know, are you going to get people from Baldwin County who are closer to Pensacola or it's pretty equidistant, and that if the price is $10 cheaper in Mobile or $10 more in Mobile, are they going to drive to Mobile or are they going to drive to Pensacola? So you're going to me, and, you know, I'm no expert on these things. I'm just saying it just logically, it seems to me you're going to have some significant price reduction to get that. They say that they can't get the low-cost carriers to come to Mobile Regional, but they will come to,
mm-hmm. to Berkeley.
I have no reason to doubt that. I don't really understand it. Why, if we've already proven that people will drive out of their way for cheaper tickets, why they won't come out to Mobile Regional?
I don't get it either, but in our conversation, I mean, listen, the press conference yesterday and then the conversation that we had yesterday with Chris Curry, he said that there's some part of it that we're not privy to, or maybe the airlines don't let us know or something. But I mean, I asked him several different ways. You go back and listen. He said every time, he said these low-cost carriers are ready to come if it's Berkeley, but they're not coming if it's Batesfield. Now, I'm simplistic enough as well. Mm-hmm. I don't get why that is true, but they seem absolutely confident that that is the situation.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, absent any contract signed ahead of time or things, you know, that we're told ahead of time that these people are actually going to come and have made a commitment to come, it seems like we're probably going to go into this thing with the promise that people are going to do it, and we're not going to know who's going to do it until they do it. That's my guess. So, you know, I not to say that I don't think that the mayor and the airport authority have the best interest of the city at heart. I'm sure they do, and I'm sure they know a lot more about these things than I do. But I just would like to know more about it. I mean, it's hard to make decisions on these things when you don't know, and you don't know what the numbers are. And so it's hard to really sit down and say, yeah, I think that's a great idea.
But you know what's cool, Rob, and good morning.
Yes, good morning.
What's very cool, we talked about this morning how VIA Airlines is offering this new flight today, beginning today, going to Montgomery, a late afternoon flight. And so, and then you think about the possibility of all the people who are now coming to Mobile to hop on the cruise, how they now have a new option that they don't have to drive so many hours to get here on top of then cruising out of here. I think options are nice.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, I mean, I think there's a lot of options. You know, there's a lot of things to think about. And, you know, when you look at the growth of Baldwin County versus Mobile County, I was going through it yesterday, and it just, Baldwin County's growth rate is, you know, they're about half the size of Mobile County in the 2015 census. But, you know, they're that dot in the rearview mirror is getting bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, you know, at what point when you have 6 million visitors to your beaches and that kind of thing, what if they do their own airport? Does that kind of cut you off at the knees at that point? I'm not trying to be negative about the airport. I just don't know what, I would like to know all the, I'd like to see all the cards on the table.
Nice. It does feel, I agree with you, it does feel like we're trying to solve a word problem, and there's one of the, there's something, you know, there's something missing. You know, how you'd get that, you'd have to go up to the teacher and say, hey, there's one more thing I have to be able to do this calculation, which most of the time they'd say, Sullivan, you didn't listen in class. We told you already what it was. But it seems like there's a piece of information. I think the key to that is I would love to know, why is it that the low-cost carriers won't do the won't come in
right.
to Bates, but will come into Brooklyn. I mean, that seems like there's got to be.
I don't get that either because I mean, we know that people will drive. I mean, they say it in the thing they put out yesterday. They say it. The number one thing for people is price. Number two is drive time.
Yeah.
And we've seen people, and they're talking about people driving to New Orleans to save money, people driving to Biloxi, and people driving to Pensacola to save money.
Especially if you're taking a family of four or five, and you know, you can save a couple hundred dollars. I mean, that's more spending money. I don't think, though, that you're negative Nancy, Rob. I think
I'm trying not to be.
Yeah, I think you're making people think. I mean, being aware, that's what it's all about.
Right, that's an absolutely fair question that I know there's an answer to out there, just waiting to get that on our own.
Yeah, right. That part is tricky part to me. I know they say, okay, well, look, these low-cost carriers are going to come in here, but it just, again, it seems to me, if you build it out there and the prices don't go down, people are probably not going to come there, right? I mean, we've proven that already. I don't know that they're going to come there just because it became a little easier to get there for some of the people. I mean, certainly for people in West Mobile, it became harder to get to.
Yeah, and one of the things is, yes, and thank you. Somebody brought this up on the text line, and this is something that did come up with Chris Curry yesterday, and I remember it now, or I could go back and listen to my own podcast and remember this, the gate fee, and that because there would be less infrastructure, and this is paraphrase, I may have some of this not completely, Sullivanese and not completely correct, but because there would be less infrastructure for a terminal out there at Brooklyn, there would be less of a gate fee, which is something that the airlines, they have to pay, obviously, to be there at the airport. And I think that may be the appeal for Brooklyn. But the second they start coming in there, and we get a lot of, if it worked, a lot of people would come, then you would have to have more gates, and then you would have to have a gate fee.
What about accessibility to the freeway?
And they also said, though, if you've got more and more people, you get larger planes, and that would reduce that part as well. So, the whole equation on that is, I mean, it's complex. When you start reading into it, there's words in there I don't understand, and it's too mathematical, and it just loses me. But I'm a simple caveman. But it just breaks down to the fact of, like, how much money is it going to be, and if it's worthwhile, and it's all if you can make the money work, then you're just really talking about land usage and how are we doing land allocation out there, and that's really not as big an issue, I think.
All right, Rob, let's talk about the new issue of land gap. Beyond that, all the things going on in the new land gap.
There's lots of interesting stuff in there. This week we have, putting me on the spot, I'm trying to think of all of them, but there's a bunch of good stories this week. We've got a lot of interesting things going on. We have some stuff about our state auditor and his law license. I think that's a very fascinating story.
Well, that's kind of where I was going with that, because that story, you've talked about it with us. I had brought it up the other day, and do we, because I get the press releases, and the press releases coming from Ziegler's office are saying, saying something contrary to what's being alleged, by the bar.
Well, I've been told by multiple sources with the state local bar that his license was forced to resign his license because of a disciplinary action.
I mean, can't we definitive? It's one or the other. Can we not find that out, or is it shielded information?
He can release the records. That'd be easy enough. It's simple enough. But we know absolutely definitively the bar has said on the record that he is not eligible to reapply to the bar for 5 years, which is the same thing as somebody who's been disbarred.
There we go.
So he is not eligible to reapply. I don't know why that would be the situation if he just said, I don't want to be a lawyer anymore. But and the reality of it is, too, that there's no reason for that. I mean, you can just retire as an attorney. You can just go inactive. There's no reason to surrender your license.
I hope we get some more clarity on this.
From what we understand, there was a complaint filed at Mobile Bar Association, and it was taken up to the state, and this was worked out as a disciplinary action.
Okay. All right. Rob, if people want to pick up the new land gap, where do they go?
1,400 locations now. We're moving on up. Mobile, Baldwin County. Yeah, I know. It keeps getting more and more. So 1,400 locations, Mobile, Baldwin County. And you can check us out online at landgapmobile.com. You can also get a copy of the paper sent to your home in the U.S. mail, in that post office box, wherever you need. Just go online and sign up for home delivery.
All right, and folks asking, when's the nappy issue? Is that early
nappy
July?
Issue is the 18th of July, so the winners know who they are, being notified, and you'll see the big totals coming up in just a few weeks.
All right, great stuff, Rob. We appreciate it.
All right, y'all have a great day.
Coming right back, we'll talk to you at 343-0106. Right, 858 FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah.
Mazda.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you've ever had to get to the airport on Airport Boulevard, this is when you want to drive your Mazda, because it takes some time to get there at the airport. We were talking about this discussion with Rob, and I was just going to bring up the expressway, the accessibility, why some people may choose for it to be at Brooklea compared to, where the airport currently is. But anyway, I digress. Back to my Mazda.
Yes.
Well, for at least 24 hours.
Yeah.
This is White Lightning, the 2018 Mazda 3 Touring. Been having a lot of fun. I've been posting on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, so you understand the drill. I've been testing out this vehicle. It seats five. It, from a safety standpoint, all stars, five stars from the IIHS when it comes to the top pick. If you're looking for a new vehicle, check out the all-new Dean McCrary Mazda on the East Service Road of I-65, or give a call, 471-DEAN. We will be there live tomorrow for our noon show, Midday Mobile. Check it out. Come say goodbye to White Lightning and see what I get next.
All right. Y'all have a great one. We'll be back in just 3 hours for Midday Mobile.